wrapping the kids out of their coats, the way the babies haven't been born. Oh,
welcome to Teacher Besties, a podcast for teachers. I'm Jamie.
And I'm Kelly. On this week's episode, we will discuss the new cheating industry for online college courses, as well as what motivates students, money, recognition, or something else altogether.
It may be years until the day my dreams will match up with my pay.
So, what's been going on the past 2 weeks?
I've had some challenging weeks.
Me too.
Had some challenging parent interactions, so I don't really want to get into that because it was so much drama, but I will say there's a couple things I'm super excited about that I think teachers could use in their classroom.
Excellent.
One was this morning when I opened up my Sunday New York Times that had come, you know, I'm a subscriber.
Oh, you actually get a paper copy?
Uh-huh, yeah.
Oh, look at you, keeping it alive.
Yeah, well, also, what was cool is that the subscribers today got, they had this, they called it the New York Times Virtual Reality Experience.
And okay.
Hashtag, literally, if you search hashtag NYTVR, you'll see all of these people that got this, like, box. It was a cardboard box, kind of like the size of your phone, and it has glasses built into it. And in conjunction with that, you download an application for your phone, and they had created a little documentary reporting piece where you put your phone into this box and you watch it. And while you're watching the story, you literally have a 360-degree view of it. So when you move your head, like, up to the sky, you see the sky. When you look to the left, you see what's on the left side of the screen. So
that's so cool. I'm looking at I googled it.
It was amazing, and the story is also really powerful because they followed three children that are refugees from one was from Syria, one was from Sudan, and one was from Ukraine.
Okay.
And they also did an accompaniment, like, really this was because they did a huge feature in the magazine that also came out today, where they follow these three kids and their story. And they're all like 10, 11, 12-year-old children who have, like, had these horrific refugee experiences. But part of the documentary was, like, you know, like, you're seeing where their classroom was bombed, or you're seeing, like, a food drop go overhead, and when you hear the plane, you look up to the sky while you're looking through the goggles
and you can see it
happening.
Oh, that's neat.
It's so cool. So I just thought, like, it would be amazing for a variety of kinds of classes. Like, if you teach journalism, it'd be a great way to talk about new media and the importance of, like, telling stories in a different way. And then I thought, like, a lot of history English classes could do cool things about it. I know I'm going to try to have my world lit class of seniors look at it this week. And just the only bummer was I was like, how can I get my hands on like 30 of those boxes? But they only gave them out to subscribers. And this morning my husband was Googling, like, how you can get them. And they're like $15 a pop.
Man. But you're going to let me play with them next weekend, right?
Oh, for sure. But okay. So I'm, like, trying to figure out, like, how I can get a few more. Or, you know, in the meantime, I have a really small class of seniors for this world class lit class. So I think I will just let them, like, take turns and check it out. But it's super cool.
Or listeners, if anyone subscribes to the New York Times, maybe you can let us borrow some.
Yeah. Definitely email us at teacherbesties@gmail.com if you want to donate them to me, because I will use them.
That's so cool. Anything else?
Yeah, another really cool resource that has come out in the last few weeks for English teachers is if you teach Bartleby the Scrivener. Did you read that in high school?
I did read that. No, I read it in college, actually, but I read it. Is that what I emailed you? I thought I emailed you something really cool.
I can't remember, but maybe it's the same thing I'm talking about, the Slate online magazine, they recently did an interactive annotated version of it. So like if you already are teaching it, your kids can go online and they can choose like a variety of annotations to look, or they can choose like certain interpretations to read those annotations for. So like there's a lot of different interpretations of like how that story should be analyzed. And so this one guy, Andrew Kahn, went through it and did like an exhaustive, you know, sort of interactive way of getting into it, which I think would be really cool.
I sent you, must have been like two, I have like flooded your inbox for the past few weeks. Sorry. but I just thought cool. And I don't know, like you're my English teacher bestie. It was a graphic novel of that really famous poem, I'm going to butcher it right now. The J. Alfred Prufrock thing. What's the title of that poem? Love Songs from?
The Love Song of J. Alfred Prufrock.
Yeah. So there's like a graphic novel comic thing out about that.
Oh, cool.
And it's in your inbox. Go look for it.
Okay. Awesome. Well, there's like three really cool interactive things that I think teachers would love to use in the classroom. And I think students would be really responsive to them.
Yeah, I'm really not good at reading comics. It's a challenge for me, to be honest. It's like I have a hard time figuring out, this sounds really stupid, but which words come first and like where you're supposed to look. Like, are you supposed to look at the picture first or just read? And so I find it a little like it's an overwhelming experience. But I can understand very clearly how other people enjoy that.
Totally. And it could be a really good supplemental thing.
Yeah, my week also was, or my past 2 weeks were... It was hard, but I really love Halloween, so I want to talk about that.
Tell me how Halloween went.
I have a series of four costumes that I rotate every, because, you know, kids are only in high school, in theory, for 4 years, if they do it right. And so that way, like, if they see me, it never looks like I'm repeating. So this year I dressed up as Rosie the Riveter again.
A classic. Very good.
Yeah. My mom has this, or had, because it's mine now, this epic shorts jumpsuit. She claims it's from the 90s. I swear it has to be from the 70s. But it's like, it's shorts and short sleeves, and it's this like dungaree blue. And I wear it with some Converse, and then I do my hair upright. And, you know, it's nice to be a strong lady. I also
have. You actually kind of get away with looking somewhat like Rosie the Riveter in your coloring. Like you have.
Oh, yeah. But she has dark hair in the photo, but I have But I have very poor, she is also like very pale looking, and I am too.
Yeah.
In other years, I have come as Amelia Earhart. I have a killer leather bomber jacket, which I enjoy wearing and proving to myself that it still fits.
That's awesome.
I've also come as Audrey Hepburn in Breakfast at Tiffany's.
A lot of kids don't get that one.
I know. I really wanted to, and you obviously know you talked me out of this. I wanted to dress up as, oh my God, what's his name? Andy Warhol. Like I wanted to get like the clear glasses and get a white wig and wear a black turtleneck, but you told me no one would know who I was.
Well, okay. I mean, maybe that's underestimating our students, but I don't know if they would get it.
They might not.
I think it would be an awesome costume, but I think you would maybe need to wear like a Campbell's soup can in addition
to it. Oh, I planned on like holding it, but you're right. I don't know. Everyone knew who I was, except someone who thought I was I Love Lucy, which like that was a staff member actually. And
oh, that's sad.
No, that's okay.
My thought is that I know you, and I think that you would be really annoyed if at the end of the day, none of the kids got that you were Andy Warhol. So that's why I tried to steer you in another direction.
Yeah, no, it was probably for the best. And then two other ladies who I know listen. One came as Miss Frizzle, who I just loved it because my sister used to make fun of me because I have red hair when I was a kid. And she used to call me Miss Frizzle when it was like really poofy. And then another costume idea, which I think I'm going to steal for next year, is the lovely Ruth Bader Ginsburg.
Notorious RBG.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. So I heard that was the hot costume this year.
Was it really? And she's the only one I saw with that. And I was like, I was trying to get my whole department to come as the justices. And then, like, I got some, like, really terrible, like, blackface jokes about Clarence Thomas. And I was like, okay,
we
are not doing that.
No. Unfortunately, there's no diversity in your department, so you can't just like accurately assign that one out. I heard that Notorious RBG was like the hot costume, and when I saw that picture of you guys on Instagram, I was so happy and so jealous. Like, I was like, why couldn't I be like my own feminist costume and get in that?
You could have. I would have lent you my graduation robe. You could have next year.
All right. Well, did anything exciting with the kids happen on Halloween? It wasn't actually Halloween this year.
No, it wasn't. It was on the 30th. But I feel like there weren't as many kids dressed up, but the ones that were so cute. Like, one kid came as Stephen Hawking, and I was just like, awesome.
That's cool.
And sorry, that was the only one I was really excited about.
I had, I think kids were confused this year because it was the day before Halloween, but then also it was like National Pink Out Day. So a third of the kids were dressed in pink for Breast Cancer Awareness Day. A third of the kids were dressed in costume, and a third of the kids were just like, I don't really know what I'm supposed to do today.
Oh.
I did my traditional, like, I usually, if I have juniors, I will play the, Simpsons Halloween episode that has the witch hunt, like the Salem witch trials spoof in it, because then they like all of a sudden get all the jokes and they think it's hilarious because it's after they've read the Crucible, and I show like the Raven version and a couple other like Englishy, you know, Halloween things.
Yeah,
so it was fun.
Well, good for you. I don't do anything. I give them candy and then I teach them a lot.
Nice.
Because I'm not fun.
Aww.
Except the best part is like I'm really serious in costume and I'm like, yeah. And then the best part about Halloween is this one girl who's a freshman told me that I looked like I was 15.
Oh, what amazing compliment.
I know.
I don't think they're ever gonna say that to me again. I feel like I'm past that stage.
Well, I'll let you know if it happens again, but it's the first time it's happened in a while. It was pretty pretty awesome.
All right. Well, you know what I'm looking forward to in the next 2 weeks?
What?
Thanksgiving.
Oh, me too. I love Thanksgiving.
Yeah. And I actually get the whole week of Thanksgiving off, so it's going to be amazing.
Yeah, well, we're all not as lucky as you. Do you want to talk about cheating?
Oh, yes. Okay. Do you want to intro the piece?
Sure. So I found this article, I don't know, online. It was a week ago now. It's from November 4th. It's in The Atlantic. It's called Cheating in Online Classes is Now Big Business. It actually caught my attention because for a while I've been looking perhaps at EDD programs and distance learning and thinking about like how a community is really created if you're far away and what that really means. And then this really, really caught my eye because I would never, like, when we went to school, this would never have been an option, that you can basically hire someone to either, or mostly online, and there's a company called No Need to Study. You can hire them and a bunch of others. I'm sure you could just Google them, because later on in the article, it talks about, like, looking on Craigslist in cities that have major universities and hiring people who guarantee you at least, like, a 90%.
Okay, hold on. Let me back up a second.
Oh, sorry.
Like, just to clarify, I think the nut graph here in this paragraph that, like, really spells it out is that it said, like, this reporter basically emailed that company that you said.
Oh, yeah.
And asked if they could take an English literature class at Columbia University for them online. And they got an email response from someone in customer relations who told them that not only could the company take the online class for them, they could guarantee a B or better, and that it would cost her about $1,200.
Which is crazy, which we can get into the economics of that and
right.
If we want later, but we can even like table that for a future discussion.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think this brought up so many questions for me in addition to like just thoughts on it, but you know, first when I was reading it, I noticed like they said that a third of all people enrolled in higher education are now online, taking classes online, so like 7 million students are taking at least one online class in the U.S. right now.
Mm-hmm.
And There's actually a few universities now that are, you can get your entire bachelor's degree online. You never step foot into a classroom. You don't even ever really have to go to that school. Arizona State is one. SUNY Empire State is another. And it's like noted basically that for about $40,000 extra dollars, you could never take a class and just pay someone for your degree.
Which is like, what's the point? And I know that like we can even have a discussion about like the inflation of grades and do grades actually mean anything? And is just getting a bachelor's degree ticking off another box of something that you need to do in order to be able to get some sort of quote good job? Mm-hmm. But what happened to academic integrity?
Right. I mean, I think that what this reflects too is the larger problem of like the question of what is a college education for? Like, and what is the degree for? Like, too many students seem to see it now as a requirement simply to get a good job and to be quote unquote successful. And like the idea of going to school for enrichment or like to actually learn from the brightest minds in that field, it seems like that's, we're getting away from that. And that is kind of a symptom, or this is a symptom of that larger problem.
Yeah. And I don't know. I mean, like, I guess what I thought in a very practical sense while reading this. So let's say that like for, to make everything even, you're going to pay 40 grand a year to go to college. And then you're additionally going to pay, so after 4 years, that's 120,000. Then you're going to pay another 40 grand to have somebody take your classes. So is it basically worth another year? And like, what are you doing in the meantime? Like, do you have a full-time job? Are you able to pay that off without accruing more debt and hiring somebody else to go and take the class for you? Like, how like is that? Who can I mean, fine, we're going to talk about it. How are people able to afford this?
Well, and I mean, I think that doesn't that bring up the idea of like who's actually going to be doing this? Because I guess a few people come to mind, like one, just kids that are wealthy who can, they can afford it. There's always going to be people that can afford to pay their way out of things. But then more commonly, I'm wondering, like, are these the kids that are in like sort of the middle class where they feel like accruing all of this debt without earning any money at the same time is setting them back? So like maybe if they can work some sort of job instead, like they're gonna come out ahead. I don't know. Like
I mean, if you're in college and you're going full time, there's really no way you can work a full time job and go to classes full time. Like a Like,
which
there's not enough
time. Which
is why
you pay somebody to take your classes.
It's just, sorry.
That's what I'm saying is that, like, if that's the financial game, if the idea is I can at least make some money, I might not be able to make the amount of money that my degree is costing, but if at the end of the game I don't have $120,000 in loans and I have, you know, a lot less and now the ability to get a higher paying job, like, sadly, maybe that is what people are thinking.
Maybe. But then I also think like, well, what if you're on a degree program for something where like getting a degree in English is great, but like you don't need, sorry, English teachers, you don't need English to save someone's life. But like, what if you're taking a medical class and like bio, like your pre-med, like your major. Mm-hmm. And so you need, you're going to, in theory, need that information. Mm-hmm. How could you justify that? That's not ethical at all.
Well, that also made me think, like, is this going to lead to certain professions having more proficiency exams, like the same way that you have to take the bar? Or, you know, there are lots of jobs where you have to take a test before you're really certified to do it. Like, is this going to just lead to more checks and balances in terms of like your degree is not enough anymore? Because, but I mean, I think that would have to be mean that this would become very prevalent. And I think what's actually going to happen is that there aren't a lot of people that are going to pay for their entire degree, but there are probably kids out there that are going to say, I'm never going to pass that statistics class. I'm never going to get my degree unless I pay somebody to get it. And that's what's going to happen.
Yeah.
Is there will be people that they cut the corners or they make it happen because there's that one class that they just can't seem to pass.
I guess I wasn't thinking in terms of just one class. I was thinking in terms of, man, What lazy people.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely think it's lazy, but I also think it's, I don't know, maybe just this acceptance that cheating is okay now. Like, I mean, when was the last time you asked our students if they thought everyone cheats? Because I've asked them quite a few times, like how many times, like, do you think most people cheat? And our population of students actually tend to believe that most people cheat in order to get ahead.
You know, I have never cheated in the sense that I have never copied off somebody's paper. However, I've definitely let people copy off me. Mm-hmm. And my husband gets really mad when I'm giving tests in my room and I don't make more than one copy. I'm like, oh, they're not cheating. It's okay. He's like, no, you need to have at least two copies, if not four copies, because I have tables and there's four kids at each table. And he gets like really fired up on my behalf. So I'm actually giving a quiz tomorrow and I have four different versions.
I've created lots of versions. Sometimes I actually just make the same version, but I label them as different versions because I figure they're, you know, the psychology behind it dissuades them from cheating. But
I actually, I labeled mine four different for tomorrow, but they're only two.
Right. Yeah. So other things that this article brought up, other questions for me was, you know, is this going to lead to sort of like a dumbing down of our college educated individuals?
Yeah, I thought a lot about that too. And I guess, so I, when college classes, especially from like big universities, or not big, but like esteemed universities started coming online, I thought that was really awesome because, you know, it means accessibility for more people. And I didn't necessarily think that with accessibility comes like loss of, I don't know, like it should still mean something.
Yeah.
Integrity.
Did you take any online classes in college?
Not in college, but I, to get my English, my like special English credential I have, I took classes online. I had to, I didn't have a choice, through some university in San Diego.
Would you have ever opted to take certain classes online? Like, for example, general education that like you weren't maybe super invested in, but like you just needed to get them done.
I might have, but at the same time, I don't think, I mean, like that's more than 10 years ago now. It's not like, I mean, I guess, yeah, but at the same time, like I was all about taking naps in college and like reading in bed. And so like I needed to get out of my dorm room and do stuff. So I'm going to say no. I like the in-person class.
Well, no, I definitely like the in-person class, but I took some online classes in college, and I mean, I would say my primary reason was that I needed to save time because I was working at the same time, and there were classes that I just knew, like, if I take it online, it's going to be a lot easier because I could work it around my schedule, and I knew that I had sort of, like, the work ethic to just get it done. Like, I'm just a get it done kind of person.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, but I definitely didn't sign up for those classes thinking they were equal to an in-person class. I just thought, I have to get these credits. Let's just do it. I mean, I would also say that universities don't seem terribly motivated to curb any of this because they're making a lot of, or they're saving a lot of money off of these online classes. They don't have to pay as many instructors. It's easier to manage. So I'm going to guess that until this issue actually tarnishes the reputation or credibility of a top university or institution, like, I don't think they really care.
No, they might not. But if I was in charge of a university and I knew this was happening to an extent, I would figure out a way, even if it's like a distance learning program, like interact online and discussion boards and like make that like a very small percentage of the class. But then a vast majority would be like a seated assessment, which you would have to complete in a room. I don't know. I just feel like that balances out and reduces the amount that people can actually cheat.
So, like, ultimately, like, you still have to take your exams in a proctored room where you show your ID the same way you had to take, like, many of your exams in college.
Yes, except I never had to do that in college.
Except, you know what's really sad is they have these same kinds of scamming people that take the SAT for people and they show a fake ID.
It makes me think of, what was that show? The law show on USA where the guy like took the bar for people so many times and he wasn't a lawyer himself, but then he pretended to be a lawyer. Did you see that?
It sounds really familiar and I can't figure out what it is.
Suits. It's really is mouthing Suits to me.
Great. Suits. So basically that is our future, is a USA drama.
Exactly. I'm pretty excited to talk about this one. It's there was an article in, I don't know what the conversation is. I think it's like a teacher
blog.
Yeah. What gets students motivated to work harder? And the answer, according to the study, is not money. Basically,
what was the study?
There was a study done of 500 students between third and fifth grade and figuring out what actually gets them to do better in school. And it involved people who were eligible for free after-school tutoring services. And so there was a reward of $100, and it was distributed online if they had consistent attendance. There were also recognitions of, like, you get a trophy or a certificate mailed to your home, or there then was the control group that got neither of these incentives. And the study found basically that for students that were offered up to $100 for regular attendance, that the money really made no difference at all. Mm-hmm. It was more of like the recognition that you got, which made more of a difference, and that girls, apparently gender is a big deal. And that, yeah, on average, girls in the control group versus boys, they attended more. And then offering a certificate enabled like 67% more of them to come for longer versus money. Oh.
I also wanted to clarify they did it with 300 fifth to eighth grade students as well.
Oh, sorry. I got the data wrong.
Oh, okay. So then never mind. They did 300 fifth to eighth grade students in a large southern urban school district where students were eligible for free after school tutoring.
Yeah.
Okay. So here's the thing. I think this study's been done a bunch of times.
It has. That's what I wanted to talk about.
I remember hearing an episode of This American Life where they did like a really similar story.
Wait, before you even continue that. It's also like a chapter in Freakonomics and then like a clip in the movie. Like one of the little things is about this too. So you go first now.
Okay. So I actually think that This American Life story was just covering that Freakonomics. But okay. Like, so they've done this before where they show that, you know, they say like, if you get this grade, we will pay you this much for every grade that you get. And I remember them saying that, like, for the first few days or even weeks, some students were more motivated. But like, as the semester and year went on, the same results occurred. The same students who were always unmotivated or who got low grades or who burned out after a few weeks and would just like continue the same habits, they would never get the money. And the same kids that would be motivated would get paid at the end of it.
Okay. So I reread the study before we started talking because I really was excited about remembering. And nice. There was also, so money, while it does play a role in incentivizing students, the concept, if you don't do well, then your money gets taken away, is an even big motivating factor to do well. So the option of keeping it or having to give it back.
Oh.
Yeah.
So having to give it back motivated them?
Even more.
Oh. So because I remember, you know, looking at this study and the kids that were not motivated, like the same kind of kids that just repeated the pattern, I thought that it was kind of like the ultimate takeaway was that it's really hard to match inherent motivation and to like figure out how you develop inherent motivation in kids.
Yeah.
And like that sometimes the money thing isn't what it is. I did notice, or with the thing I did find interesting about this particular article, was that the kids who got the recognition sent to their parents seemed to do better than the kids who had recognition in front of their peers.
True. Which is so also like, interesting.
Which I feel like shows, at least at that age group, not high school maybe, but that age group kind of shows like how much they value the like reinforcement at home, and also like how your home culture can really affect your grades. Whereas like sometimes those kids actually don't want to be singled out as academically motivated in front of their peers because it could be totally uncool.
Yeah, absolutely. I think I read something else about that in the Freakonomics study. Mm. Also to note that the Freakonomics study was a northern urban high school, and it was obviously older children, not third through eighth grade.
Yeah.
But what I wanted to talk about was two things. One, I don't know if I've ever told you this before, but I definitely growing up got paid for grades.
What?
Yeah.
I learned so much about you on this podcast sometimes.
I didn't need it as motivation, but like, it's definitely a thought. Because it's always like, okay, I don't know what your parents said to you growing up, but for me, school's a job. Like, I was told that school's a job, and you go. And like, yeah, you're paid in knowledge, but when you do well, it's like, here's a little bonus.
Oh my gosh.
Which is not how they advertised it at all. But
would you do that with your own kids?
I don't know. It depends. If they're like me, then yes. Because it's like I put all that money away.
Oh, so you saved it.
Yeah. Well, not all of it, but most of it.
I feel like you're just like a clone that parents create because you're like the kind of kid that is, you know, you're pretty easy to manage. I mean, you've got like anxiety things sometimes, and I can imagine you had a lot of real big freakouts as a teenage girl. But, you know, I'm guessing they knew where you were on a Saturday night.
Oh, absolutely. I don't think I lied to them maybe like twice. If you're listening, I'm sorry.
I did not get paid for grades. My mom was always someone who like recognized that school was really difficult for her, and like she always kind of felt stupid, I think, in school. She has like serious memories of being placed in like what she called the dumb math class. Aww. Like they like split her like fourth or fifth grade class up into like accelerated and dumb in the way that she felt. And she felt like every year, instead of being taught the math she wasn't getting, they just put her in the lower level. And so like every year she was put in the lower level until she just felt stupid. And
that's really sad to hear.
Yeah. But also my mom's like a pretty big, like positive reinforcement person, but like not necessarily like in a monetary way. Like she was always just like, she's like a big cheerleader. And so I think I just like learned that like I wanted to get that positive reinforcement.
Yeah.
She's also real good at laying on the disappointment factor. That's like, she has a really good balance of that like psychological parenting that I think I could use myself. But she, I think, never focused on the importance of the actual grade. Like, she wanted me to do well, but the actual grade was not the most important thing.
To clarify, I think I would have done the same. Like, I don't think the money was a motivating factor. I just think it was an added benefit. Okay, and the second thing I wanted to bring up from this article was, how do you actually motivate your students in the classroom?
I mean,
because we're not going to pay them.
Heck no, we're not going to pay them. I mean, if I'm being totally honest, I think my praise, when I give students praise, it's very genuine. I don't, like, I'm not a big, like, I don't know. I mean, I try to keep a positive attitude, but I think my students definitely know, like, when they did well and when I'm disappointed in them. And so I think that I try to motivate them by understanding that, like, when they do well and they hear that they're doing well from me, that, like, that should mean something. But I don't know. I sort of think it really still only works for the kids that are inherently motivated.
So I asked myself this question before we started. And at first I was like, I don't motivate my students. And then I realized that was a huge lie. Because, I mean, most of them obviously are self-motivated. I have the luxury of working in a school where college is basically where everyone is going next, so they need to do well. But then I realized, I've been reading a lot of those articles about, like, if it's an individual teacher that makes the most impact or a good school. Mm-hmm. And I definitely subscribe to the individual teacher theory. And I think that, like, and I think you're a lot like me in that, like, when we get excited and we actually give genuine praise, not just like, hey, good job, pat on the back, that it means, as you said, so much more to a student and one that's actually already inspired to continue to get that praise from us.
Yeah. I do a lot of, like, student reflection in terms of why they want to do well in school and not just having them be grade motivated, because I tend to talk a lot about, like, whether or not that's valuable. And, like, yes, getting good grades is good, but I don't know. I think in the long run, like, the kid that gets B's but is genuinely interested and has a sense of wonder is probably going to perform a lot better in college than the kid that, like, got straight A's mostly just because they, like, followed their grade really closely online and, like, begged for certain points or...
Oh, I absolutely agree.
So I think I try to encourage them to be genuinely interested, but that's really hard to do. I also think that in my best years or in my better classes, you know, like, when I have a good like a good relationship or good rapport with my students, I think that they always do better, because I think that deep down they want to please me. But I don't know.
No, you can say that.
Go the other way.
It could, but I don't think it does often.
I also think that I also use peer motivation, because I have them read things. Like, I have them read their writing out loud, and I have them show their writing a lot of the time. And a lot of the times they're way more motivated by impressing their peers than they are to impress their teachers.
Yeah.
So, but that's a good question. I mean, how do you motivate students? I think it's really difficult because they're all different, and you know, some of my students, I'm sure, are being paid to get good grades right now, and some of them are just being punished, and some of them, their parents don't care, and some of, you know, it's just like there's so many influences and so many factors that it's a hard thing to, like, streamline.
Don't you want to ask your students tomorrow if anyone gets paid?
Yes, I do now. I mean, I'm so interested. Like, I'm probably going to ask a few of my classes, and I'm going to tell them, like, one of my teacher besties told me that she got paid in high school, and it blew my mind. How many of you guys get paid, and what do you get paid?
I'll have to ask my dad. I don't really remember. I feel like I'll report back to you later. I'm not sure.
I also kind of want to find out if what they think about this idea of paying someone to take an online course for them.
Well,
I think that's
I feel like you're introducing an idea that maybe they wouldn't have thought of.
I think that if we know about it, they know about it.
Well, I just like to assume the best and, like...
Well, okay, let me ask you this. When you were in college, did you know that you could have bought a paper online?
Yes.
Okay, well, so that was the technology when we were in college, and we knew that you could do that. Why didn't you buy a paper online?
Because I have integrity.
Well, I mean, I can tell you I didn't do it probably because A, I didn't have any money, and B, I knew that it wasn't going to take me that long to write a paper. Like, I had the confidence to write the paper. But I think that a lot of the kids that are cheating now are doing it because they actually don't think they can do it.
Oh,
like,
that's...
they don't have the confidence.
All right, you ask about the online class one. I'm not asking about that.
I'll ask my seniors. I'm not going to ask my other students, but I'll ask my seniors what they think about that idea of, you know, spending so much more money just to have someone else take the class.
Yeah, I just kind of feel like, and I know we already finished talking about that, like if you're going to sign up for a class, like it should be worth your while. You should want to go there and spend time and like genuinely be excited to learn.
Yeah, I mean, especially when a lot of these kids are trying to go to top tier or Ivy League schools, like if all you want to do is get a job, a state school can do that for a lot cheaper.
Absolutely.
If you want to go to a top school, you should be paying that tuition in part because you think the people that are teaching at those schools have knowledge and wisdom that you want to like be a part of.
I agree. And on that note,
we're gonna wrap it up.
Yeah.
All right, cool.
Because I think we could talk about that forever, and I feel like,
oh, I know,
not everyone would be very happy with us.
Well, the next time we talk, we might have a guest.
Yeah, that will be very exciting if that happens.
TBD. And then also, I will be like so relaxed because I will be going into the Thanksgiving break.
Yeah, I will be really excited because my parents are coming for the first time in like 4 years to celebrate Thanksgiving with me.
That's awesome. So you're going to cook the turkey at your house?
My mom is going to cook a turkey at my house. I can do everything besides a turkey. I just, every time, my turkey does not come out well.
Do not underestimate yourself. A turkey is like the easiest thing to cook. That's the reason why everyone in America makes one.
I don't know. Every time I've made one, it's just like subpar.
No, it's not beef bourguignon, okay? Trust me.
Ooh.
You can do it.
For dinner, I made chicken vindaloo.
Ooh.
It was really good.
That's pretty good.
Yeah.
All right. On the chicken vindaloo note, let's tell people where they can find us.
All right. You can find us, as always, on our Tumblr, teacherbestiespodcast.tumblr.com.
You can email us at teacherbesties@gmail.com. And you can find us on iTunes by searching Teacher Besties
Podcast.
Yeah, please follow us, or subscribe, I mean, and share it on Facebook so that other teachers that we don't know can listen and maybe have something to contribute.
Yeah, thanks for listening. Have a great week.
Bye.
Bye. My dreams will match up with my pain.